mind experiment. You would break it down until you found that portion within the matter which did the sensing, and that would be the fundamental sensor. And if you ever got down to that level, you have a paradox. The paradox is the sensor itself would be immune to move, because it's not the moving part. It's not the fundamental part that does the motion. It's only the sensor. And yet we know that all matter simultaneously senses, simultaneously moves. So you've come to a very peculiar result. And the result is, A, either there is no fundamental particle ever, or B, if there is a fundamental particle and then you constructed something of it, it would be immune from gravity. Now you have your choice. You can have two conclusions from the same mind experiment, and the answer is not yet solved. I mean, science does not know the answer. We know that as we reduce what we thought were fundamental particles, we get other particles. We get hadrons, we get baryons, we get mesons, we get leptons, we get neutrinos and antineutrinos. I mean, there's a whole zoo of things going on beneath what we thought was the elementary particles of the atom. And science is in a very young and formative stage.
Isn't
right
that
now.
The truth, though? Let me interrupt and I'll say goodnight. It occurs to me that, not that this has anything to do with the subject matter tonight, but the more we look into the smallest of the smallest, the more we are inclined, basically, to seek the truth. We keep looking at the heavens and the space and the vastness of everything. And the fact of the matter is that the reality of things is probably going to be found in the smallest of the smallest.
Well, that's where the energy is, and basically that's what we're working with. You know, it wasn't too long ago that science, which knows all, would have told you that you could not have a free energy device, that was a deception. We now know that that's not true. You can have one, and they are on the market. Or not on the market yet, but they soon will be. A device that generates an enormous amount of energy, much more than it uses. And I invite you to listen on December 9th when John C. Bedini, Steve Wirth, and Tom Bearden will be here.
I look forward to it.
And we'll go further into the theorems behind it. It's amazing things that are happening in the laboratory, and I've had the chance to see them with my own eyes. But we'll save that for you. Or December the 9th.
Thank you very much for listening.
I was
going to mention entropy, but I think I've exhausted my time. Thank you, gentlemen.
Okay, Alberto. Appreciate your interest and your call. We have Jackie on the line. Hello, Jackie.
Hello. I hope Esther is still listening, because I just got to agree with her. The next thing you guys are going to try to tell us is that the world is round. I mean, come on. I think I know that I'm standing on flat ground. What are you guys going to do? Deceive our reality or what?
Well, we kind of want to stretch your reality box a little bit.
If you want to bring up the problem of round versus flat, it's still an open question, and I can show you some very interesting paradoxes if you'd like to hear them.
Well, actually, I'm just kidding. I just couldn't believe Esther's inability to deal with any new information. And she was not going to listen to anything you said. And now I know why we are faced with such inertia in social changes and other kinds of changes. People like Esther are out there everywhere. In fact, I guess most of us are a little bit like her. And what I find frustrating, I'm not particularly a convinced believer in UFOs, although I can't say that they're not there either. But the problem is that when we're so set in our beliefs, we're blocking our abilities to fulfill our own potential.
Well, let's not come down too hard on Esther. I think that it is very, very healthy to have a skeptical attitude about everything. Otherwise, you get your head in the clouds and sometimes down alleys that are dead ends.
But I like your teasing question about the round and flat Earth. Let me lay this one on you. As you probably know from elementary geometry, there's a theorem that says parallel lines never meet. Well, that's the fifth postulate of Euclid's geometry, and it was only in the 1880s that it was proven by Lobachevsky that that's not necessarily true and not necessarily consistent with the other four elementary postulates of Euclid. Here's where keeping an open mind is important, and here's how you decide the issue. Suppose you have a sphere like the Earth, and you draw two parallel lines at the equator that are perpendicular. Now, they're parallel and they're perpendicular to the equator. Now, if you follow those lines up to the North Pole, all perpendicular lines on the equator meet at the North Pole. And you have to imagine that. If you draw two parallel lines perpendicular to a line on a flat piece of paper, they never meet. And now here's the paradox. If you make the sphere larger and larger and larger until it's infinitely large, it's so large that if you take any part of the surface of the sphere, it's basically flat. You can make it as nearly flat as you like. And now the question is, do parallel lines meet or do they not meet? And you cannot answer the question, and actually both answers are correct.
Well,
so we live in a round flat world.
Do parallel lines meet or do they not?
Well, they meet if you can define the space that you're in. But the point is, you have your choice of defining the space, and you can accept Euclid's first fourth postulates and decide either way on the fifth without disrupting the logic of the first four. That's the point that Lobachevsky proved in his celebrated theorems in the 1880s.
Well, this is all true, I imagine, because you are more learned in this area than I am. But my point is simply that, I mean, I agree with, is it Bill Jenkins?
That's it.
Oh, okay. That, you know, everyone's, that you have to have discriminatory listening, otherwise we'd all, you know, our heads would all be swinging. But, you know, I guess the point of this whole show, the open mind. I mean, it's like if we don't keep our minds open, we can never change for the better.
Very
you know,
good.
It's like we have to take in the new information and
carefully sort it and get the best out of it and bring it to the surface.
Take the best and leave the rest.
Let me just warn you that if you try to really keep an open mind, it can get very scary because the things that are out there to be decided are really, really crucial to science, to politics, and to the future of the world.
This is very true, which is why we all choose to, most of us choose to remain safe and ignore any new information because it shakes our safety and shakes our security.
That's been true throughout civilization, and it's the easy way out, but I don't think it's the best way out.
No, I definitely agree.
Well, some of the things we're having to look at right now in the world of science are going to dramatically alter the way life exist right now, and they're going to do it in a very, very short period of time. We speak of the free energy device. That's just but the tip of the technological iceberg that's in front of us.
Let's face it, space travel and voyages to the bottom of the sea, that used to be considered science fiction.
It's a part of our reality.
Yeah,
right?
It is. So it's like if we don't keep open minds, we can never go onward and upward. And that's just my point. And I'm enjoying your show very much.
Well, Jackie, I appreciate the support there.
Okay.
Appreciate it very much.
Thanks a lot.
They're out there. You know, most people want to be open-minded. Yeah.
Bill, I wanted to put the framework of scientific inquiry into perspective with just this comment. Your listeners may not know that recently, in the last month or two, the Soviet Union published a definitive report on the Tunguska explosion of 1908.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something very, very interesting there that I'd like to comment on. As some of you may already know, in the year 1908, there was an extremely colossal explosion over Siberia in Russia. And it was observed by many ground witnesses that there was some illuminated object that came into the atmosphere, but then veered in an upward direction and then exploded. It exploded over a forest, and all the trees were blown down from a central point, but the explosion did not occur on the ground. It occurred in the air, because there was no crater. But Russian scientists have been looking into this because the explosion was so colossal that the blast, the shockwave from the blast, traveled around the world twice. And it was heard very clearly in London. And the sky was really colored for months afterwards with the debris of the explosion. What I wanted to emphasize was that the Russian scientists who have examined the site under the explosion have determined that fragments of whatever it was that exploded could be radiologically dated. And for those geologists who are listening to our program, we know that the oldest rocks discovered on Earth that were dated by radiological means go back about 4.6 billion years. Now, what was remarkable about the fragments found in the Tunguska forest was that there were some fragments that were dated by their lead isotope ratios to go back 11 billion years. And the Russians therefore concluded that whatever it was that exploded was an intelligent craft that had run into some difficulty and exploded in the Earth's atmosphere in the year 1908. And the thing that's so startling about this new report is that if there is a vehicle that had material on it that was 11 billion years old, and we are just at the beginning, we are just at the beginning of the technological age on Earth, then somebody out there is 7 billion years ahead of us technologically. Now, if that doesn't stagger the imagination as to what could be done in the future with persistent research, I don't know what will, because I would like to have a 7 billion year head start on modern technology, which really has only been exciting for the last century or so.
You know, it's one of the reasons that we get into the UFO question quite often. Rather than keeping it a secret, as our government has chosen to do, and if they were to come out and say, okay, we know they're here, this is what we have found, we even have some of the spacecraft, we have some of the aliens, in this way they would harness the genius of the American people in order to cope with the scientific data that was there. You know, the real geniuses of this world are not in the Pentagon and in the think tanks at the Rand Corporation. They're everyday citizens who get out there and work hard and have an unusual brightness about them anyway. And we could make some technological advancements that would be startling, I think, if that were finally brought out into the open.
Well, Bill, that was the exciting purpose of bringing this project to the attention of the United Nations. I think before people could be candidly informed and equipped to do mutual research, there has to be some agreement among the nations that the results of this technology should be used not for war but for peace. And I think that at the present time that agreement could not be structured, and that is why there is a blackout on this area of research.
Unfortunately, we are in such a primitive state that technology means weapon systems in the beginning, and after we get through with that foolishness, we finally figure out a way to use it for the betterment of mankind. I hope we get out of that step quickly. We're going to have to. Okay, John, you're on. I'm pressing again. Hello, John?
Yes.
Okay.
In keeping with, I guess, with what we were just talking about, putting this whole UFO question sort of aside and viewing it more as a phenomena, like put it in a context of a scandal, like Watergate or the body count in Vietnam.
I certainly think it's been a scandal, the way it's been handled, yeah.
That's precisely my point. And you keep referring back to secrecy, blackout. Why? The government, certainly in Watergate and in other investigations, has taken some really hard shots. The military, in recent times in Vietnam, has had to swallow some bitter pills, and science has just been rocked. What possibly could be going on with UFOs that would create this secrecy, create a blackout?
That's a burning question that all of us have wanted to answer. We have some ideas.
The only answers we've ever heard are from the 50s black and white sci-fi movies of it would panic the public. I don't believe that.
Well, I think that's
absurd.
When it first happened, that was a very real concern, when they first really had to deal with the problem.
Where did that concern come from? It came from Hollywood. We've never even had the...
No, it came from Washington. It came from basically Harry Truman when the clampdown really, really began to happen.
Now, something Harry Truman did, we're still dealing with that?
Yes. I think that the real clamp happened with what is known as the Roswell incident. That's when it started to happen.
In New Mexico?
In New Mexico, when they did retrieve a flying saucer.
But
yeah,
so what?
Remember, we were just outside.
It's really not that big a news story.
Well, in that
UFOs are not that big a thing.
Well,
they're really not.
I think it probably would be a big thing.
Well,
I don't. You know, I think if one landed in a shopping center and there was a sale on of tires for $5 each, no one would care.
Oh, I think you're wrong about that.
I think everybody would go in and get new rubber for the cars.
You know, well, you may be right about that, come to think of it.
Well, you know, it's good to put this in perspective and look at similar technological confrontations. I can think of one that's very famous. It was a confrontation where Galileo discovered moons on Jupiter. And at that time, the Pope declined to accept that position because the universe had been ordered and described based on optical sightings without the aid of a telescope, and the new information was not consistent with the conventional information, and because the world was ordered in a very conventional and stable way for thousands of years, the authorities in power at the time didn't want to disturb that, so that the Pope at that time, in a very famous a historical event, declined to look through Galileo's telescope. Now, anybody who makes a telescope can see the moons on Jupiter. And we are still discovering moons on Jupiter as our instruments become more and more refined. So that, you know, you can suppress truth and you can ignore it in order to keep the establishment.
But you can't really suppress
going,
truth
but,
for very long.
But you can't suppress it forever. Yes,
and
that's
why
the point.
Hasn't this story, you know, come to a head? Watergate came to a head.
I think it
Vietnam
will come to a head.
Vietnam came to a head.
Yeah.
Why hasn't this story come to a
I
head?
I think it will come to a head, and it will come to a head when one major power develops a squadron of UFOs and uses them in a military or political operation. And then they'll say, ha, 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 here we are, we have our UFOs, and yes, we fooled you all these years, and now what are you going to do about it? We are superior to your aeroplanes, and there's the final answer. And, I mean, that's coming because I think that in these years, enough research has been done,
you know,
where the secret is just...
I can't accept that answer, because if you look at recent history, our space shuttle is vastly superior aircraft. It's the most advanced aircraft in the world.
Yes, but it operates on conventional principles.
But anything compared to anything on Earth, it's leagues ahead.
Yes, but I'm saying UFOs operate on totally different principles.
I understand what you're saying,
and
but your
different...
point was that we could develop a squadron of jets and go over to another country. We can do that now. That's not the point.
Yeah, but we can't go around the world in 8 minutes, and that's what UFOs have been reported.
But we're not. I thought your point was you were talking about with another country.
Well, I'm saying that this whole subject will come to a head when UFOs are used under the flag of a nation to do a task or a mission. Then it will be a fact.
I think we've just seen that.
Well, no, the shuttle can't be compared to the technological capabilities as has been reported that UFOs are capable of doing.
No, I'm not comparing to that, but he was comparing to what other powers on Earth have. And I think the shuttle.
Well, I think what he was pointing out there is that there is a great fear. Let's assume for a moment that it is a fact that we have crashed UFOs and that
yes.
the Soviets have crashed UFOs.
Yes, I don't think that's important. I think
well,
what's
it is important in this respect.
Is why?
Here's the
why
importance
is
of that.
Why the secrecy? Why?
Well, because I think there's a worldwide race to develop this craft under the flag of a given nation, and the nation that gets there first wins. So they're not going to help anybody in any kind of really logical understanding of these principles or phenomena. They're just trying to win the marbles all for themselves.
If we can figure out their propulsion system, if we can figure out their weapon system, if we can figure out their navigation system, we have a mighty leg up on any other nation.
Which we have already.
Well, not to the degree that would give it to us. It would be
I don't see the advantage. I really don't. I mean, if we had an incredible propulsion system and could mm-hmm. make 90-degree right turns, what would we do when we get there? Drop a bomb? We can do that now. I don't see any advantage.
We don't know exactly what the weapon systems are.
Well, one of the advantages that I could point out is that these craft can do intergalactic flight because they come from another place that's far removed from the solar system, and having one of these operational gives us the chance to explore the universe. That's one.
Yes.
That's one mission that we can't do with conventional technology.
Yes, but you know that film that's coming out next week, 2010.
Mm-hmm.
It deals with a lot of that, and it deals with the idea of how absurd it all gets the second you get off the Earth, and no matter how different the astronauts are, they have Russian and United States astronauts together. The second, no matter what your politics are or how fervent you are about them, the second you get off the Earth, they're gone. They become minor.
We hope that that's so, you know, that politics is a local phenomenon. But I have to agree with you. There's no reason for the secrecy. I think a great deal more would be accomplished by having it open and all men working for the betterment of mankind. If that technology would be helpful to us, and I suspect it would be very helpful to
us. Well, I'm not being that Pollyanna about it, but I'm just...
Unfortunately, man doesn't think that way right now.
I just can't understand why the secrecy.
Me
either. Why the blackout. We don't even get the... When they'll say the White House today said, like a building could talk.
Mm-hmm.
We don't even get that from anyone. It's not... I've never actually heard somebody say there's no UFOs.
Yeah.
Officially.
They haven't been. In fact, you'll find officially there's a lot of them said that there are UFOs.
Or maybe. It's all very... Okay. There's nothing clear.
We'll have a clear look at what the government is saying and what they're not saying and what they're trying to cover up next week when Larry Fawcett is here. He's written a fascinating book called Clear Intent. Clear Intent to cover it all up.
Has the government actually made definitive statements?
Do you want to read the one from General Marshall?
Well,
remember
yes.
Who George Sue Marshall
yes,
was?
Yes, I brought the quotations that I read on our list meeting back in September, where in the 50s, Douglas MacArthur and George Marshall and General Nathan Twining, who was the Chief of Staff of the Air Force, made very positive and clear statements. And here's one, if you would like one from General MacArthur, who said, and this is a quote from the New York Times, dated October 9th, 1955, that the nations of the world will have to unite, for the next war will be an interplanetary war, and the nations of the earth must someday make a common front against attack by people from other planets. Now, General MacArthur was not being vague or being conjectural. He had access to all the UFO reports in the military as commander of chief of the Allied forces, and to come down with a statement like that was his mature consideration of this threat.
General Marshall was even more specific, I think, in what he had to say.
A lot of the comments that you both addressed in this question are from the military rather than from the government. I believe you talked about a man in Orange County someplace. Clark, is it?
No.
Curtis May or LeMay?
Oh, General LeMay.
Who's recovering. That's three times tonight that you've spoken about...
Well, the military has been the one that's chiefly involved with dealing with this phenomenon, other than the hundreds of thousands of citizens of
more
stature
than
as you.
More than the government.
And a time before the government, even Jimmy Carter defined what he saw, and he defined it very explicitly, and there was no question about it.
Do you think that while he was president, he as a... curious person would have looked into this?
Well, he promised to look into it and to do something about it, but when he became president, he also became acquainted with the security network and the organization that surrounds a government, which is extremely powerful.
It's too bad you didn't hear our last broadcast, because at that time I read Jimmy Carter's report on the UFO sighting.
I've heard it before.
Yes.
It would be fascinating to talk to him now. I wonder if there's some way Bill Jenkins could call him or get a hold of him.
We tried to talk to him about it.
Because he's in a unique position.
Yes.
He still will have no further comment, by the way.
Really?
True.
Why?
Because he's been briefed as president to say that these are important considerations to the nation, and they override individual curiosity of why, because that doesn't give us any brownie points if you know the answer, but it sure helps us if we have a military posture that keeps a nation strong. And as I said, these are difficult political decisions of state.
He's not president anymore. He's a man that walks around in Levi's and goes to SWAT meets.
But yes, he won't talk about it, John.
Huh?
John, he won't talk about it for some reason or another. Maybe one day
he
will.
Why not?
I don't know. I'm going to have to let you go and get to these other calls. I appreciate yours, though, and I am as curious as you are as to the why. We'll get a better look at it next week, too. All right? Oh, let's see. We have Pat. Tom on three. Come on. Hello, Tom.
Hello, Bill.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Hello, Edwin.
Hello.
I'm calling in reference to a film that I saw a few weeks ago about Bill Myers in Switzerland.
Oh, yes, Billy Meyer.
The Billy Meyer case.
Yes, we're very familiar with that.
Well, are you familiar with the documentary that was made by the team from Phoenix?
Yes, I've seen it.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You have? All right. Well, that was, it seemed to me that that clarified a lot of things that I don't understand, but I can see and accept. And one of the points that they were making was about the UFOs riding the magnetic waves of the Earth like a ship rides the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And if you remember the graphs they had, the people that he's in touch with come from the area of the Pleiades.
Yes.
And make the trip in 8 hours.
Yes.
They'll make it in 8 minutes, their new craft. Try that one on.
For those listeners who are not familiar with this particular case, Billy Meyer was a Swiss subject who was a kind, an ordinary sort of chap who lived up in the mountains, and over a period of 5 years had continuous and repetitive contact with many UFO crafts and their pilots. And he was permitted to photograph them. He was taken aboard them and photographed the inside and the outside through portholes while he flew around the Swiss Alps. And it, his photographs were published in a volume. Visitors, I think, from the Pleiades.
Contact from Pleiades.
Very fine square foot color photos. I have a copy, and Bill tells me the book is so rare now it's selling for $500 a copy.
Yeah, volume one is. Volume two is out with even more photographs.
Well, right. The photographs are mind-boggling, and it shows very good detail of UFO vehicles. And it also shows in the latest volume copies of the pilots, the photographs of the pilots. And it's quite exciting, and I've had more than a casual interest in the project because friends of mine from Phoenix went over and discovered the case, and I've been in early contact with it from the beginning, and I've seen 35mm slides, uncensored and uncut, right from the beginning, showing all the details, and a very small amount of these were published. I've seen the whole collection. And I find it mind-boggling, actually, and I'd like to hear your question and comments on the project.
Well, the two points that I found most interesting and which have already been discussed to a certain degree about photographs and dummying photographs, I thought are very well covered by this investigative team when they used computer analysis. And they did dummy up photographs, and the computer was able to tell the difference immediately.
Yes.
Between photographs that, to the naked eye, appeared to be the same object seen from the same distance, the computer was able to read distance and surface, and as Bill was saying earlier...
And temperature on leading edges of French reconnaissance aircraft that were flying around these UFOs. Yeah, there was a lot of work done on infrared photography and... trying to confirm the authenticity of these pictures, and it held up pretty well.
And the other point, which I was very moved by, I don't remember how they phrased the question, but Bill Meyer is a one-armed Swiss farmer, and he was asked why these people were contacting him, and he suggested that it was because he was able to get rid of his earth vibrations,
mm-hmm.
which... to the UFO visitors, our vibrations were to them as bad smells are to us.
Yes.
And when they asked him what the vibrations were, he said hate, resentment, lust, fear.
Yes, we've heard this from contact reports, and I must tell you that that is a recurring theme. And when some listeners ask why don't they, you know, land in the city square where we could see them and approach them, the answer that the aliens have given to selected contacts is that, you're right, they said that the stench of a group of humans is so bad that they can't get in the middle of it. It could be fatal. So what they do is they reconnoiter, according to their own accounts, they reconnoiter until they find somebody who's genuinely meek and
a little more evolved.
Humble and honest and pure, and then they can one-on-one talk to them. But they said that there is a problem with corruption in the world. And, of course, one could say that this is just a canard to make fun of humans, but anyway, that's their reason, and we don't have any other reason, so we accept the reason that we hear on these contact reports.
Well, I don't think that you would want very much to have yourself placed down in, say, one of the old markets of the Renaissance age, where it was really a dog-eat-dog world.
Yeah, well, I get the impression it would be almost like them landing in a cesspool.
Well, I think you're kind of close. A snake pit, anyway.
And